In welcoming you, I think what is striking is that we dedication. The dedication is comprised of figures. We are, we may sound as a broken record, but we do appreciate, because that is what in a challenge global, that people just think that they can do things better. I always make an example that, you know, when you're at home and you are cooking something, when you come in and that pot is burning, the first thing that a woman will say, switch off the heat. And I always make an example with a promise too. And when a man comes and he says, what's bad? And he says, nothing. And I always make that example because people always think that, they say, women are very emotional. I was reading an article in one of the magazines in the NIV that, when women are asserting an independent thinking, they are always being associated. Their emotions are always associated. So I didn't want to have a comment, I do appreciate. But we took a decision as Secretariat to invite you as the Commission. Precisely because we are in an environment now as a country that issues of transformation are coming to the fore. And it's quite an emotive subject. I was listening to the Nelson Mandela Memorial Lecture, which was Judge Mukwege, when Chief Justice was presenting that memorial lecture, and he said something very profound. That we must not feel apologetic or afraid to say, so that we are addressing when inherited a particular legacy from the colonialism. We must not allow ourselves to be blamed, just summarizing. But we can't blame everything on both the problems. So we are in that state, we are in that state, and we then thought, because we are a committee that has been Committee of Labour, that is, then we had an added money, the responsibility of ensuring that creates a conducive environment for employment. We are not going to create employment. going in, but we are, that's our understanding as women of this community, that we are to create a conducive environment. And for us then to be able to create that conducive environment as an Abu state that is connecting oversight and accountability on government. Ours is then to say, identify commissions, entities, institutions that are then going to make us be able to really understand. When people are complaining, are they unfair? If I stand at the podium in the House and debate, am I working on general? Do we really understand? Because for us to create that enabling environment, there are things that we are to know, difficult, challenging, and they are going to be mostly, and they are going to be. So, I do think that and what is very strange is that both the chair and the minister of this committee, the minister in terms of the cabinet, and the chair being the parliament, of the two largest unions in the country at the time.
Yes.
An educator and the health worker. So some of the things that we are speaking from a position of being informed about how then, what is then happening in our, where I work before, I always make an example about this when I talk about transformation. They were called, now they are called CEOs. At the time they were called hospital secretaries. And this hospital secretary was to resign. I think it was 1991. And when he was to resign, he was then to get a package of a hospital secretary. But he was a hospital secretary that was coming from the previous subject. Yes, at the time, because she was the main and what? And we were seen as members of Nehao at the time as being there. Unfair, irresponsible, ignorant. But for us, one person, he can't, he's going to leave me there. Don't get a huge package. That will be the best, which he doesn't deserve. We don't have a problem that he was the favorite at the time. So how then do we, so commissions of this nature are to assist not only ourselves, but also the community to really understand. And there are things that we have to accept. In science and technology, when I was here, the first time, one member of the opposition said after I had spoken, they said that, no chair, she's wasting our time here in waffling. I then said, yes, chair, no, I mean in waffling. I agree, teaching. One, I'm not a scientist. Chair, I'm not a scientist. But the reason that she is saying I am waffling is because she was privileged by virtue of being white, made rich, that she was able to do science. And in terms of sign language, unfortunately, and I'm not apologetic, I said, no, the teacher is bringing in the issue of race, and I said, no, it can't be. It's not going to be. It's the truth. But how then do we ensure every community that we did, what's the step I used? Demobilizing the language, the step of making science that it is then people, because when we studied, science was an area which was for the chosen few. At the time that I was in school, if you want to do law, minister, science was compulsory. So you are not here only to present the steps to us. You are here to empower us. We will ask questions as members. Those questions, in my view, are questions that are going to empower you. Because all of us here are here to ensure for the benefit of the country. And for all of us to really understand that it's about time. You may have heard the noise outside. The noise. Why take out a black person? Why when a black person goes out, a white person is to be employed? We have to understand. Is it about race or is it about status? Is it about people being rigid or is it about people not really understanding that now we are to move on? And then we are going to ask difficult questions. Bear with us. Maybe we will ask trivial questions. Bear with us. That's why I'm saying both sides are here to empower one another, because I still want to go that we have been charged with an added responsibility of ensuring that we create an enabling environment for everybody, because South Africa belongs to everybody. We use the both black and white, female, people with disability. So I'm happy that you have honored our invitation. You come in the number, and I'm sure yourselves are excited when you speak to this day. Because we were aware that sometime in the year there is a presentation that was done to the ministry, and we then said that there must not be a gap, and also ourselves are to understand what is then the situation. So, in so, this I'm welcoming you. Feel free. Unfortunately, you have been put in this small home. Don't be. We're here. And before we do the introduction and the House Rules, we then allow the Minister if there's anything that you'd like to say. Over to you, Honourable Minister.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and Honourable Members. Chairperson of the Commission of for Employment, the DG and the officials who are here, the media, here, ladies and gentlemen. I got a nice call in the evening at about 11. My wife was asking how was Scotland. The response teaching was, I survived. Chairperson, and members, the DG and I must get quite accustomed to presenting the youth employment strategy to the government. It's a big debate. Shifted to quite accustomed from what was there. In brief term, and to come straight to the point, the annual 2018 report of the Commission for Employment Equity, which we call it the CE, is basically saying there's been very little transformation in the workplace since the passing of the Employment Equity Act some 20 years ago. This is particularly true at the mid and the upper occupational levels. The groups that are most underrepresented for both male and female are African colored and persons with disabilities. So the chair of the commission, of course, will provide some details, but we must all agree this cannot continue. Unless we're going to become a joke as a country with lots of legislation. We pass a lot of legislation, but there's very little in the implementation. If it means massive litigation, so be it, because other people are threatening that. Let's just be ready for that. This unhealthy situation flies in the face of an inclusive economy, one of the priorities of this government, which the president has elaborated on. What is frustrating, Chairperson, is that some in big business are very quick to condemn what they see as the fundamentals of the economy and so on. Unless government moves and restructure, the IMF makes a lot of noise about all those things. But there's hardly any from the big organized groupings who are talking about the industry not transforming, leaving the majority of the black people behind. I take that as hypocrisy from some of the international institutions and even to organize the big business. Why are they not confronting this issue? It's unhealthy, it flies in the face of inclusive economy. And this lack of transformation and employment equity has to be tackled head on. Through a number of things, the spectrum and the regulation of the sector target as alternative to self-regulation. And we must just agree self-regulation is not working. There must be some enforcement measures. So the promulgation of Section 53 of the Act, which requires every employer that wishes to conclude an agreement with any organ of the state for furnishing of the supplies or services to provide an employment equity compensation. And I think we have to be tough on this certificate. People are not just going to cream off what they do not want, they throw it to other people. That time has come, we become hard. We are hard to ourselves, they are also hard, and we must be hard to them. So I believe social responsible corporates will welcome this. And indeed, when certain groups are underrepresented in the economy, it also means that talent and skills are underutilized. How many of the black kids are facing the unemployment with all the qualifications? Coincidentally, Chairperson, oh, by the way, I should have put this up to the Deputy Minister is in Geneva, talking to the issues of social security. It's a big, big, big issue now, given the massive unemployment worldwide. Coincidentally, I met with a group of students who are studying masters and PhDs in nuclear physics. All of them are saying we don't know where to go after this. We're not getting employed, we're not getting absorbed by the big industry. And these are qualified people. So all I'm trying to say is, that is talent. Those kids are passing with distinction, but they come back without any employment, when they're supposed to be employed even in the private industry. We also expect that where some employers are slow to reform, that activism by workers and their unions will help us. Help us to nudge the process of employment, this employment equity in the right direction. And I want to repeat this part, Chairperson, that there is no other way. The lack of transformation and employment equity has to be tackled by setting the regulation of the sector target as the alternative to self-regulation. Because people are refusing, literally. And we must monitor that. And clearly, we're going to, according to this Section 73 of the Act, which requires every employer that wishes to conclude an agreement with any organ of the state for furnishing of the supplies or services, to provide an employment equity compliance certificate. Why should people demand tenders, demand business from government, but they do not want to transform? Why should we continue giving that? I think that time has come that we also buy it. The last point, Chairperson, which you have just raised, the noise which is outside. I want people, when they debate this thing formally and even informally, of the employment of a permanent CEO, ask very fundamental questions for building a non-racial South Africa. We have never said we're excluding the whites. But what is even more important, how many black CEOs were there before the white one? So to us, the issue now is about stabilizing that particular entity. It has to be stabilized, regardless of who the person is. It has to be stabilized. But transformation is also not about one person. It's about the whole ESCOM system at different levels and so on. To me, that's transformation. Even ethics, you look at the structures, you look at the ethics, you look at the values, how people are doing things. But it cannot be reduced to one person. Because when you ask the question, you have heard black CEOs before, what has happened? Even if you had the one black CEO, that's not transformation. You must look at the whole system. And I want the colleagues, when they debate this matter, I know that it's informal, not for this forum. But these are the discussions we have also had. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think we have accepted your apologies. So when members see you limiting the teaching, they must understand it. Within that, there's also a member already, and is also attending another committee, the committee that is of no name. That only is confidential. So she will also lead to the next step, the meeting. So in the introduction, we're going to introduce ourselves, members know how to do that, and then the leader of the delegation will then do it in the way that you think is fine for you. When we debated about how we introduce ourselves, for those that will be coming to the committee for the first time, House rules for our silence. The presentation is going to be delivered by the Employment Equity Commission. Questions are going to be asked by members, and how then you are going to respond will also be determined yourself by who will then explain how then we are going to be dealing with that situation of questions that have. Having said that, My name is Amine Ratunja. I'm chair of the portfolio committee for employment and labor. On my left is Zolani, who's the portfolio committee secretary. Next to him is the content advisor, Spokeseni. Next to him is the researcher. Don't ask me why they're all me. On the extreme right, there at the back, Ms. Pushia, who's our committee assistant. I will now hand over where the minister is known, Minister Gleason. Then I will ask honorable members to introduce themselves. Then after that, it will be the commission. And then everybody who's here outside those that I have mentioned. Over to you, honorable members.
Morning, everyone. My name is Nobuchi Ngama. Thank you.
Morning, members, Chairperson, Minister. My name is Bongile Zuma from the ANC.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Minister. My name is Louise Denner and I'm from the FF Plus.
Molweni nonke, igama lam ndingunceba inana ophuma kumbutho weDemocratic Alliance.
Morning everyone, my name is Michael Carter, I'm from the DA.
Hi, Michael Bagram from the Democratic Alliance.
Good morning, my name is Advocate Tiran Raundi, representing the EFF.
Good morning, honorable members and minister. My name is Virgil Tigre, Deputy Director General for Labour Policy and Industrial Information and for Employment.
Good morning, Chairman. Honorable members, my name is Toby Lenavat, Director Center of the Department. I also want to take this opportunity to introduce the Commission, headed by the Chairperson, Ms. Tabia Kabinde. She's accompanied by a number of commissioners, Ms. Shoki Chabalala, Ms. Soto Ntuli, Ms. Anneli Heldenes, Mr. Bulent Trebe. You can see, Chair, that it's well represented. I saw you smiling, Chair. Of course, we've got other officials from the department. This is Wakima Mashela from the Labour Market Police Branch, and we have the support staff from the ministry. Thank you, Chair.
Can we then, outside the commission, the department, who's here? Can we introduce yourself using the mic?
On the record.
I'm
a journalist from
the Coast. Big
Ita
Mandoni
from
PNG.
You can use the nearest one.
My name is Tubato from the SNC.
Thank you very much. I thought we have located to a small hole. but by virtue of this commission, from my leadership, then I can get that. But it's fine. We will then hand over to the chair of the commission. How you be doing your presentation will be dependent on you in terms of who's going to do what. And after that, members are going to ask questions. We will take all questions if they are, because we take this as an information session. But if they want to ask questions, it's fine, but we take all the questions, then we'll allow you to respond after that. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for having us. Let me also acknowledge that our minister joined us today. Our DDG and our DG, thank you for coming and accompanying us and making us feel comfortable. I'd also like to acknowledge the presence of the honourable ministers, members of portfolio committees, as well as my fellow commissioners, members of the media, and officials from the Department of Employment and Labour. I will be going through the presentation, quite a lengthy one, with about 40-something slides. But maybe before I start, let me start off by talking to our mandate as a commission, what we are about. Chair, you said that it's a session where we will be educating each other and giving each other information. I think that's a good starting point, just to share what our mandate is in terms of the Act. So the mandate of the commission is to advise the Minister on all issues related to the Employment Equity Act and the implementation thereof. We are also mandated to conduct research that would enable us to give sound advice to the Minister. And finally, our mandate also includes making awards to companies that are progressive in the space of transformation. One of the things that we're well known for as a commission is the launching of our CEE report, which we do once a year. And what this report does is that it gives a status quo of transformation within the country. It's based on reports that we received from what we call designated employers, which are employers that have an annual turnover that is based on a particular threshold, as well as employers that have 50 or more employees. I also want to talk very briefly to what the Employment Equity Act, the two pillars of the Employment Equity Act, based on Chapter 2 and Chapter 3 of the Act. Chapter 2 talks to substantive equality, talks to employers creating an inclusive environment in which transformation can happen. And in there we would look at prohibiting discrimination as well as promoting the rights of others through ensuring that there's no discrimination either in terms of policy, procedure, and the like. Chapter 3 then focuses primarily on affirmative action, and basically what it does is that it seeks to ensure that the workplaces are reflective of the demographics of our country. Primarily in terms of the Act, we talk to what we call the economically active population, national economically active population, which is which I will share with you when I share this, when I start talking to the slides. So that in brief covers our mandate and what is covered mainly in the Act. I need to emphasize that the slides that I will share today focus primarily on Chapter 3 of the Act, which is affirmative action. We will, especially during question time, talk a little bit to issues of substantive equality and some of the challenges, and then when we talk to Way Forward, look at how we are seeking to address that. So let me go on then to the presentation, Chair, if it's okay with you. So just in terms of the outline of my presentation, and it's based on the brief that we received when we were invited, we're going to talk about the economically active population, the national economic active population. We're going to talk to EE status and trends. We're going to do a trend analysis between 2016 to 2018. We're going to make key observations of the latest report, and then we're going to share with you our way forward. What is the EAP? The EAP is what we call the economically active population. And it basically talks to people in the South African citizenry that are employed and those that are seeking employment. It excludes people that have sought employment and have become discouraged and are no longer looking. If we look at the age group that are covered, I think it covers from the age of 16 to 65. So it's all those people within that age group. If you can go back, let me just talk to the statistics. In terms of the demographics, the African population makes up 78.8% of the economically active population, with 42.8% of that being male and 36% being female. The colored population, males make up 5.2%, while females make 4.4%, and the total population of the colored population is 9.6. Indian population is the smallest, with males being 1.7 and females being 1%. The total is 2.7. And the white population, males are 5.1 and females are 3.9, the total being 9%. Males make up 55.2% of the total EAP, while females make a total of 44.8%. This is very important statistics, because when we benchmark progress, we look at the EAP. We're saying what we get from the report and the statistics, well, if we are to say the sunset clause should kick in, then we believe ideally then the world population should be looking like this at all occupational levels. We then to start with top management, and that is the highest level of all organizations in South Africa. The white population currently makes 66.5%, while the African population makes 15.1%, the colored population 5.3%, Indian population 9.7%, and we have the foreign nationals at 3.4%. It's interesting to note that whereas I had initially said that the EAP of the white population is just below 10%, that they make up the highest population at this level, at top management. You'll also realize that in terms of transformation, the white population at top management decreases on an average of 1% per annum. So if we talk in transformation, that is the rate at which we are transforming top management. Reduction of 1% per annum at top management. If we look at it in terms of gender, I think the minister already started off by saying that when we talk about designated employees or people that need to be redressed, we're talking about black people, which cover African, colored, and Indian. We're talking about women, black and white, and we're also talking about persons with disability. So looking at gender, you'll realize that 2018, our statistics, we have a top management, males being represented at 76.5%, while females are represented at 23.5%. That means that females are really underrepresented at top management. Top management by government and private sector, I think it's a known fact that government generally is doing by far much better than the private sector in terms of transformation. And if you look at this slide, you realize that actually the African population and the white population are almost mirror images of each other in terms of representativity, with government doing far better, 76% being African, while the private sector, the highest population would be the white population at 69.6%. You will see that at this level we also have foreign nationals at 3.5%. This is the highest we have of foreign nationals. It's followed, interestingly enough, by the unskilled level. So that is the entry level. At entry level, you have a population of 3.4% of foreign nationals. Top management by government and private sector by gender. Male population in government 67%, while the female population is 33%, and in the private sector 77.7%, while females are at 22.3%. If I can just comment on that, you realize that though government is doing exceptionally well in terms of race, it's lagging behind in terms of gender. So that is an area where we need to focus as government. The next slide really talks to top management by province, population groups, and gender. And it's quite a lot of statistics, and I'm sure you've all had an opportunity to look at this. But if you look at it, you realize that the one province where you have the highest population of the white group would be the Western Cape. Same slide, but this time same dynamic, which is population group and gender, but this time by sector. And at sector level, the one sector that has the highest of the white population group is the agriculture sector, and we'll talk a little bit more about that when we engage. Then we move to senior management. If you go back to the previous slide, please. Again, another trend analysis at senior management level. This time you'll realize that 2018, the white population is at 54.5% and the African population 23.2%, colored population 8%, Indian population 11.1%, and foreign nationals at 3.3%. Again, the trend that I've shared persists, a decrease of 1% per annum. And I need to say that although here what we're giving is a reflection of the past 3 years, in reality, this has generally been the trend since the enactment of the Employment Equity Act. A decrease of 1% per annum of the white population, especially at the top three levels, or 3 to 4 levels. In terms of gender, if you do a comparison, you'll see again, we're looking at 1% decrease per annum from male to the female figures, and currently male population is 65.5%, while the female population is 34.5%. Senior management, government versus private sector, again, very similar trend to that of top management, with government doing by far much better than the private sector. In the private sector, you have 60% of the white population, whereas in government, it's a mirror image of that, African 71%. And the colored population in government 7.6, Indian 6.7, and again, foreign national more in the private sector at 3.4%. By gender, comparing government and private sector, though government is still doing better, we haven't reached the EAP in terms of the female population. Males are at 60.8%, in government, in the private sector, 66.9%. In terms of provinces, again, at senior management, the Western Cape has the highest population of the white group. Sorry, was it sector? I missed the sector slide. Again, if you go to the by sector, agriculture is the highest, followed by retail and motor. Then I'll go to the professionally qualified population. Now, if we look at the professionally qualified population, we're really looking at what we call middle management. And a lot of the time, it would be people who are highly qualified, people who come from tertiary institutions. And this is where we begin to start seeing critical mass emerging, because it would be a phase at which people come in with qualifications and they're appointed either at that level or at the level below, which is the skilled level. So you will see that these statistics start becoming quite interesting and encouraging. 2018, the African population is at 40.2%, colored population 10%, Indian population 9.4%, and the white population 37.4%. I need to mention that up to now, the white and the Indian population are overrepresented up to this level. Again, foreign nationals at 3%, around 3%. By gender, you'll see that again, we get males are still more than females, but we're getting quite close. In fact, I think we, at professionally qualified level, we are at the right EAP, so the representation here is quite good. If we compare the government and the private sector at this level, you'll see that the African population is doing well, getting closer and closer to their EAP, 65.2%. Colored population are at their EAPs, 10.5% and 10.7%, so it's looking good there. And the Indian population, like I said, overrepresented in both, actually, government and private sector, and as well as the white population, overrepresented in both. Foreign nationals, 1.6% at government and 3% at private sector. Moving on to government, private sector by gender, much more representative of our EAP in terms of gender. Then again, if we look at by province, I won't focus on the detail unless you have questions, but again, we see that the Western Cape is still the most highly represented by the white population. In terms of sector, I believe that still the agriculture sector is still the highest in terms of the white population. Skilled level, and just before, if you can go please to the previous slide, I just want to talk a little bit to foreign nationals. If you look at the slide, the skilled level, the professionally qualified level, which is middle management, you'll realize that the transport sector is quite high, as well as the catering sector in terms of the employment of foreign nationals. It is worth noting. Skills level, we've got quite a good move there. If we look at current statistics in terms of the African group, 63.3%, colored group 11.2%, Indian group 5.4%, white 18.5%. We're beginning to see a much better spread in terms of the groups, and we're beginning to see ourselves moving more closer to the EAP. It's quite encouraging. The question that is often asked is the professionally qualified level and the skilled level are the entry to senior and top management? Why is it they're looking so much better, but it doesn't follow that people will move up? You know, the natural progression, obviously you would promote from internally before you start looking outside. Why is it that at those two levels it's looking so good, yet it becomes quite thin at top and senior management? It's also interesting that at this level, this is the level where you have the least foreign nationals, the skilled level. By gender, representative of the EAP, we start looking at gender, we look at a comparison of government and private sector, very close to the EAP, with the African population at 77.5%, the colored population at this level overrepresented within the private sector, 9.3% within the government sector, Indian population 6.9%, and in government is exactly at their EAP, and the white population in government more or less at their EAP, and 23.2% from the private sector. If we compare gender by government and private sector, you'll see that we actually, in the private sector, we have 59%. That is male, with 44.2% being female, and in government 44.1% versus the 55.9%, which is female. And that just gives us a picture of the differences by gender and race, looking at the different provinces, and then by sector as well. And then we move to the semi-skills level. It is at this level that we get a much better picture. If you look at the African population, here we see them at their EAP. African EAP is around 78%, and at this level it's at 77.5%, which is quite close. The colored population is 12%, Indian population 2.8%, white population 5.5%, and foreign nationals at 2.3%. By gender, 56.1% versus 43.9%. If you do a comparison of government and private sector, you'll see that African population is actually overrepresented at this level, 84%, while the private sector is 76.3%. Colored population close to each other, 11.5, 11.9. Indian population, 1.7. In government, actually, this is the first time that you see the Indian population being underrepresented, 1.7%, and 3.1 in the private sector. The white population in government, 2.7, 5.8 in the private sector, and foreign nationals, 2.8% and 0.1% in government. By gender, males make up less, 45.8%, while females make up 54.2% in government, and in the private sector, 59.1% male and 40.9% female. And that gives us a difference by province. When we look at this, we generally look at the three economic hubs by province, which is Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape, to see what is happening there. And they give us a good indication, because that's where the bulk of the people would be. Okay, and then here we're looking at it by sector. You will always realize that government falls under the community sector, which is the last one. And you'll realize that most of the time that's where you would see the bulk of designated groups. So again, it proves the point that government is doing much, much better than the private sector in terms of race, and still even by gender, although they're not at where it should be. The unskilled level, this is the highest level, at the lowest level. This is the level at which most of the South African population would get entry into the world of work. And when you look at this, you'll see that the African population represents 83.7%, the colored population 11%, Indian population 0.8%, white population 1.2%, and as I said previously, foreign nationals are as high as they are at top management. And this is quite worrying, because it is at this level that people should get an opportunity to enter, and I believe are citizens. And when we talk about foreign nationals, the principle is that we would appoint foreign nationals in areas where we don't have skill. Now, at the unskilled level, I'm puzzled by the fact that we would have the highest level, 3.5%, being foreign nationals. In terms of gender, if we look at the 2018 statistics, 58.1% of the population would be male, while 41.9% of the unskilled level is female. If we compare by government versus private sector, we realize that government at this level is 87%, while the private sector 83.2%, colored population 11.4 versus 10.8, Indian population 0.7 versus 0.8, the white population 0.9 versus 1.1, unskilled level. It's interesting, I need to state, because you'll remember that when I spoke about the total population of designated employers, we said foreign nationals are at 3.5. Now, when we compare it here, I need to just state that we look at government on its own without state-owned enterprises, okay? And when we look at the private sector, we would exclude NGOs. So that's why you might see at this level that the private sector appoints 4.1. But when we look at the general statistics, we talk about 3.5. It's because we've excluded NGOs and we've excluded state-owned enterprises. By gender, we see again that the representation of males is still more in government, 56.4, in private sector, 59.2, and women, 43.6 and 40.8. More or less the EAP, so it's satisfactory. And that's a representation, again, by sector, by province, I apologize, at the MCO level, and then here we have it by sector. Then, up to now, I've only spoken about race and gender. And when we started, we said that persons with disabilities are also designated. This is the area that gives us as a commission grey hair. And I'd just like to elaborate what our challenges are in this space. So Stats SA would give us the figures on an annual basis. They give us an indication of what the EAP is. They do their survey and their quarterly surveys, and they would give us statistics of what the economically active population looks like. But the information that we get would be based just on race and on gender. They're unable to give us figures in terms of disability. So we have no idea of what the total EAP of persons with disabilities are. I'm inclined to believe that it's much, much more than we know. And our thoughts as a commission are that there's a challenge in terms of declaration of disability. So how it works in terms of the Act, I may look disabled, but if I do not declare myself disabled, the employer cannot declare me disabled. Because the definition of disability, it goes to the extent to which individuals experience barriers in the work environment. It's not a medical definition, it's barriers in terms of the work that they do. So if I say I don't have any barriers, then I don't declare myself disabled. So we believe that we're getting less reporting of persons with disabilities than we actually have in the work environment. That's the one. But secondly, there's another reality, which is the fact that persons with disability have more disadvantages and barriers than even barriers based on race and gender. And that is, if you look at our country at educational institutions for persons with disabilities, they're much, much less. And as a result, you find, especially in the rural areas, that persons with disabilities don't actually even gain entry into educational institutions because for all intents and purposes, they are designed for normal, in inverted commas, people. So persons with disabilities do not get a fair opportunity to even get educated as they should so that they can advance in the world of work. So if we look at our statistics, you'll see that only 1% reporting of persons with disabilities. And the trend has been that we're on the 1% figure. The NDP says we should get to 7%, and over the years, since we started reporting, we've been at the 1% level. So there's quite a huge challenge as to how we're going to affirm persons with disabilities. I'm going to move on to key observations just to summarize the statistics that I've shared. We are concerned with an emerging trend of foreign nationals, particularly in the lower occupational levels, because we do not believe that there are any particular skills that the citizens of our country do not have that make it right for employers to seek to employ foreign nationals at this level. There's excellent representation of white females and the Indian populations. I'm talking now just to designated groups. But we believe that there's still a lot of room for growth for the African population, the colored population, and persons with disability. These three are lagging behind. There's also a need to really, really look at prioritizing persons with disability. And there's also a need to increase the representation of the African and colored population, especially at the key occupational levels. In summary, what the minister said is something that we want to echo, that we believe that regulation, self-regulation has not worked. So how that works is that employers would have an EE plan, and this EE plan would normally be a five-year plan, and they would set targets for themselves as to how they're going to progress in terms of transformation. And what we see is that because of the poor transformation that we see, generally, we're saying that the targets that are set at that level are not ambitious, and there isn't really serious commitment to transformation, if indeed these employers are meeting their own targets. But we believe that most probably they're not. We also did a barrier analysis survey last year. So what would happen is that employers are requested to give us an indication of where they see barriers in terms of employing designated people or promoting designated people. You know, so they would say, we've checked, we've done an analysis internally, and we recognize that our recruitment policies are discriminatory. We're working on changing this so that we can bring in more people from designated groups. Now, what's interesting is that when we look at the statistics and the figures in terms of barrier analysis, most employers are saying there are no barriers. But then it begs the question, if there are no barriers, why are we not achieving equity? Why is it, if we're saying our environment is perfect, anybody can come in, and we value diversity, why is it that we're not seeing it? Because if there are no barriers, then we should have entry. And that is quite a big challenge, and thus we say that the setting of workplace targets is not achieving the intended purpose of the Employment Equity Act. So what is in the pipeline? We have revised one of our instruments, which is the EE844, and it's already being used. You will know that the reporting period is open and will close on the 15th of January. And in there, what we've done is that we've made sure that we not only look at income differential, but we also look at the wage gap. We look at the difference in pay from the most highly paid person to the most lowly paid person. This is quite critical for us, especially if you look at things like minimum wage and you want to compare who earns what. And we will see for the first time with this reporting how that has worked. We want to assess the wage gap, and we also want to assess equal pay for work of equal value. We want to check that that people are getting paid what they should be paid in terms of the work that they do. The implications of the changes that we are proposing, if I can just take a step back and talk to the changes that the Minister spoke about Section 53, which talks about a certificate of compliance. And what we want to achieve by that is that every employer who seeks to do business with government would have to produce, as part of the tendering process, a certificate of compliance to the Employment Equity Act. And that would be a certificate that is generated by the system once they've reported. So it changes the field completely in terms of how inspectors from the Department of Employment and Labour would go in checking compliance. What it means is you would first, if you're an inspector, check if the employer has a certificate of compliance. And what we believe we will do is that we'll give the inspectorate division a list of all employers that have certificates, as well as a list of employers that do not have certificates, which means that are non-compliant. So when you go into an organization, you will check on the list, and if an employer has a certificate of compliance, your verification and your inspection would be different, in the sense that according to the certificate, it's saying that this employer is compliant. So you would check their plan, and check the extent to which they are claimed, talk to what they've reported. Those are the things that you would verify. You would also check on basic minimum wage to ensure that as they report, because the certificate would also mean that employers are paying basic minimum wage. That's also one of the things that we're looking to. We're making sure that our employers are complying with legislation even at that level. And then finally, it would also make sure, I spoke about Chapter 2 and I said it talks to substantive equality, creating an inclusive environment in the workplace. So one of the ways in which we can track that is by looking at the number of cases at the CCMA, discrimination cases at CCMA. When an employer reports in the reporting period, what we would do on our system is that we would link to the CCMA system to check if an employer has had a finding, a negative finding, in terms of discrimination. So if in that year, that reporting year, an employer has had a negative finding in terms of discrimination, they wouldn't get a certificate. So in that way, we begin to monitor issues of substantive equality. So if, for example, they've lost a case on equal pay, it means they're discriminatory by nature, and therefore a certificate would not be issued even if they're meeting the sector targets. So we're working very hard to ensure that this criticism that we're getting, that we fixated on numbers, we are addressing. We're saying employment equity is not only about numbers, it's also about creating an inclusive environment. So that is the way in which we can catch employers that do not have an inclusive environment. But what it means is that our employees and the general public needs to know their rights and need to be able to report and declare disputes in cases where there is discrimination. So those are the things that employers would look at, our inspectors would look at. In terms of the amendments, if I can just talk quickly to that, and I think the Minister has already covered it, the two key issues in terms of the amendment are the following. Section 53, which talks to a certificate of compliance. Two, sector targets. We're saying that self-regulation is not working. Therefore, we want to advise the minister to say, these are the targets that you should set by sector, and employers should seek to achieve those as opposed to achieving their own set targets that they do internally. We currently, as a commission, working on the EE tool that deals with elimination of harassment and sexual harassment in the workplace. The last code that we have was a code we came up with in 2015, and based on the changes that happened at the ILO conference, where the issue of harassment and sexual harassment in the workplace, bullying, were looked at in detail, and at the end of the conference there was a convention that was achieved. And so member states are to look at their policies around these issues and to ensure that they're aligning. So we're working at aligning to the ILO convention in that regard. So we believe that by February next year, we will have the draft code for public comment, and we believe by May, June, that it should be in place for implementation. I've spoken very briefly about inspectors, and I'm not going to go into detail on that, and we can just talk a little bit more, but you know, in terms of the certificate, we're saying you compare the EEA plan to the reporting, you look at where employers haven't met the target, you look at what the reasons are that they failed to meet, and you also would verify that they're paying the minimum wage, and also look, ensure that there is no discrimination in that work environment. We are currently in discussion with the inspectors division in the Department of Employment and Labour to ensure that our inspectors are well trained to go out and do the necessary inspections. You will know that at this stage, the number of inspectors that we have that are dealing with issues of employment equity are only 57. But with the budget that the minister shared in his budget speech, there has been quite a substantial amount of money that has been allocated to the Employment Equity Act, and we believe that with that we'll be able to have more inspectors in place to go in and inspect issues of employment equity.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if that is the last slide. Thank you very much, Chair.
I so wish we had a whole day only for this presentation. Time is our greatest enemy. But remember, questions, comments, directions. Everything is what audience have to start with their advocate, the little boy. Can I request this in this round, just four questions, but it must not be done two in one question. Four questions, all members, for the first round, and then we will come to the other round. Honorable notes?
No, thank you, Chairperson, and let me also welcome the honest vote. This is what we want as the members of Parliament, to be given an honest support of what we are seeing as the negative outside. So, and also welcome the comment by the Minister. You took my words, Minister, by talking the reality. So this is very much embarrassing. In 25 years in democracy, we only have the reduction or the increase in terms of the balancing of, in terms of the employment equity by 1%. 25 years in democracy, it is very bad. There's nowhere in each and every country where we find this anomaly. But we thank the Minister's comment, but it's quite disturbing because this Department of Labor was there. I don't know what was they doing. Were you spectators to see this happening, this snail increase of the employment equity? Because the only thing that changed is only the name. People are still the same, Chairperson. So we need the Director General and the Ministry to commit themselves, as the Minister said, that now they want to drastically change the environment. So the first question, Commissioner, which I'm asking is about the EAP. Your target is 80%. Why not 100% target you put for the EIP? The second one is about to the department. What is the department doing to monitor this? I mean, see, government is trying always to follow the employment equity, but the private sector is not doing anything. So why the department is not initiating transversal agreement with the private sector so that they must commit themselves? I can hear you said now there will be a certificate made to block them not to get maybe, like, if they want to tell us they need a certificate. Yeah, it's fine. But what about those companies who are big enough, they don't depend on the government, but they are here in the country? What measures are you going to use for them to comply? So the other issue which is also disturbing is about the unskilled people in our community versus the unskilled in foreigners. The foreigners who are unskilled, the percentage is very high to be absorbed by the private sector. And what is the government doing about that anomaly? And the person with disability, you said, it's 1%. Can we get the statistics all breakdown about the race and the gender of that 1%? As public representatives, we are interested in that. Lastly, 2% is the matter which you said is in the pipeline. Matter in the pipeline about the wage gap. Can the department or your commissioner consider to check the gap between the SOEs executives? You will find the SOEs under the Department of Labor, the chief executive officer, are earning the amount of money, the salary which is even exceeding the minister and the president. So we must not just look at the gap from Dow. We must also look at the gap from the state-owned enterprises. How can someone get a man more than even the president, the state president, while reporting to the minister more than even the minister and the DG? So there's something which is not normal. Thank you very much.
Honorable
Victor.
Thank you, Madam Commissioner. I just wanted to start off by saying that the report we've had now is just over an hour and a half, and you asked us to ask 4 questions. Maybe we'll get to ask another 4. I don't agree with a lot that's in this report. I'd like to comment a lot on the report, and I must tell you that afterwards there will be commentary outside this committee. So please forgive me, because often you come to me afterwards and you say, why didn't you raise it here? Well, I'm not raising it here because you won't allow me. But I'll ask some of the questions.
I said on the members, you will ask questions. You will get another round. And if honorable members want to ask questions, I don't have a problem with that. I can never be restrict you. The only thing that I think it is fair for even people that are going to respond, that we don't labor them with too many questions at a time, which then they are not going, we're not going to get the questions. Please don't take an impression that I'm not allowing members to ask the question.
I'm not saying you don't allow, I'm saying the time doesn't allow. But anyway, I have 15 questions. I will try and get through some of them. And I feel a lot of this is like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, because our economy is busy collapsing. We'll be worrying about liars, damn liars, and statistics. But let's go into it. First of all, obviously our presenter must understand that you can't go into an exercise of retrenchment in order to make way for your statistics. That you can't do. The law doesn't allow that. And in fact, people I speak to, it's mostly small business admittedly, but they tell me that they have no problem whoever they want to employ, and they have no problem, it doesn't matter where they come from and what they do, but they're busy retrenching, they're not expanding. So I don't know how you change your statistics if you're busy retrenching, because you've got to do it on a LIFO basis, effectively. So this is social engineering that we're really talking about over here, with no sunset clause ever, and in fact, as my colleague before me has said, that we've had 25 years of it, and we've gone backwards. I'm not sure what the legislation's worth anyway. The reality is that some of the statistics that we see here say that people have got training and education, and they're still not getting placement. Maybe if someone needs to have a look at the training and education, because I think in this country it's failed. It's failed the workforce completely. And in fact, maybe you can comment on it, but a lot of people come out of institutions, tertiary institutions, and schools, with absolutely no training or education at all. They're not worth anything. And maybe that's what we need to look at, not so much at the Department of Employment and Labour, but the Department of Education. Another question that I obviously begs the question, but I've never come across a business who's saying that they're deliberately not placing people who are previously disadvantaged. I've never heard that, ever. What I've heard is people saying we're going to place people who are going to be functional for us. People who are going to take into account productivity. And we're not going to employ people that aren't productive. And they obviously do try and employ as many people as they can, and people lose their jobs because they're not productive. And I think we need to again look at training and education on that level. And there's been a lot of boasting about how government, how good government has been in starting to reflect these statistics of the social engineering that we've set up. And we all know about social engineering. It took Nazi Germany in places. We've got to be very careful about social engineering, so we've got to be very careful with it. The government, yes, they have started reflecting the figures, which is fantastic, but it's notorious. We know most of government institutions aren't in fact functional. People aren't productive. And in fact, we're hearing that from almost every minister, that the governments, the SOEs, aren't productive and what's actually going on. In terms of gender, much research has been done about gender placement around the world, because it's a problem around the world. It's not a South African problem. And there's been all sorts of reasons as to why there are more males than females in the workplace, and why males actually hold higher positions, not because they're better. It's because females, in a lot of that research, have other reasons as to why they don't want to take those positions and why they don't fit in. But that's all sorts of other research. I mean, I'm happy to share that research. A lot of it's been done in Harvard about that. But I'm sure you've read all of it and you understand. I also presume that you're taking into account the population in each province. So in other words, there are more Indians in KwaZulu-Natal and more colored people in the Cape, etc., etc. Now, government doesn't seem to take that into account. They've actually been at the behest of many court cases and have been shown that they are trying to not employ, government doesn't want to employ coloreds and Indians, they'd rather employ blacks. And we've seen that in a few court cases now, and in the Constitutional Court, and maybe you want to comment on that. Disability is a real problem, because your figures are reflecting 1%. I hear from the disability sector, they think they're closer to 20% of the actual population. And at 1%, that's an absolute disaster, and there I tend to agree with you entirely. And maybe you can tell us how you're going to get that education, because employers need to be educated. They have the employers I speak to and ask them to employ people with disabilities, they have fear. Are we going to be able to cope? Are they going to be able to cope? Are we going to get into trouble? What happens if someone falls? What happens if someone has a foot, etc., etc.? It's education again. We need to start educating the employers out there. But that, I think, is a real problem. In terms of the employment
Thanks, Chair. I've got four points and questions. The first one is, when exactly will the Employment Equity Amendment Bill be tabled in the Cabinet? You suggest in the presentation that it will happen before the end of November, but we are almost there. So if you can give us some insight into exactly what the timeframes are on that. Allied to that, have you considered the potential adverse consequences of greater punitive measures, which you say are going to be incorporated into the Amendments Act? The National Development Plan says that the intention of the Employment Equity Act is to encourage firms to develop human potential, and that this requires spending time and resources mentoring and training staff. Staff training, career pathing, and mobility in the workplace, growth person and growth company. But for skills and staff development to take place, you need rapid economic growth, which will lead to greater career opportunities and rising incomes. We don't have that kind of economic growth in South Africa at the moment, and there's no indication that we're likely to get it anytime soon. That being the case, my concern is that more state intervention, more regulation, more enforcement, more punitive measures are going to have the very opposite effect of that which you intend. In other words, they're going to kill enterprise in the private sector, and that's going to undermine economic growth and perpetuate the whole vicious cycle of a lack of diversity in the workplace. Secondly, it sounds like an appalling idea to me to empower the minister to regulate sector-specific targets. How is he going to determine those targets? What will the punishment be for non-compliance with those ministerial sector-specific targets? And are these targets, in effect, going to amount to quotas, which go against the spirit and the letter of the EEA? In fact, quotas are prohibited, as you know, in terms of Section 15.3 of the Act, and the court has in any event ruled them to be unconstitutional. What are sector-specific targets? How do they get set? What is the punishment for non-compliance with them? Thirdly, a question on what has the Employment Equity Act done to promote the achievement of equality, which is, after all, its main aim. Is it not true that since 1994, income inequality has actually increased, largely because of measures like employment equity and black economic empowerment, because it's a widened inequality within the black majority group at the expense of 10 million people who remain jobless and poor and destitute? And then finally, the additional enforcement requirements necessitated by the amendments sound to me like quite a costly enterprise. You did mention that more money has been allocated, as indicated by the Minister in his budget speech. But could you tell us exactly how much more money is going to be allocated and how many additional inspectors you're going to need for the implementation of the Amendment Act? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and welcome to the presentation. Chairperson, before I pose my question, let me just acknowledge that we are having a capable female that is doing this presentation, because previously we have been complaining that the fact that every commissioner that is coming here is a male is a very serious issue that needs to be tackled, because the embarrassment of having always male being leading the delegation is that reflects the failure not only of the department but of the society in terms of recognizing the female, that they do possess the capacity and quality to lead whatever the position that they are in. But Chairperson, on the presentation, entirely the presentation reflects the dismal failure in terms of equity. Because whether you look in terms of race, whether you look in terms of gender, the equity is not there. There is nothing that can be equalized, because we don't achieve that. And since 1994, this has been always an issue that we need to balance the equity both of race and of gender. But the reflection here says a lot that we haven't done a lot and we are far from the achieving those goals of equity. Yes, I know that we still have the EES, but in terms of implementation, still money there is a very embarrassing thing. The chairperson, including during the presence of the minister and the commissioner as well, alluded to that when the companies are doing the tenders with the government, they need first to provide you with the compliance certificate. Now, the question is, how would you know that compliance certificate is authentic? There is no fronting. Because one of the issues in terms of tender, people are complaining about is that it doesn't benefit the people that you want to benefit because of this employment compliance. Because people are being fronted, and the company would look as if it is complying with the regulations, and yet it is just a small screen. The second question, Chairperson, is the issue of foreign nationals, that they possess particular skills and everything. But what I don't know, what is it that is specific? That is not in South Africa, that we only get from foreign nationals. In one of the departments that I was having the delegation coming from, when we ask the question, what are these skills that are not available in South Africa but are possessed by foreign nationals, an IT and finance expert consultant, well, one of the advanced arguments that these are the qualities that, but we have abundance of those qualifications that people are having. I haven't heard, and I would like the commissioner to do please to say, this qualification is not available in South Africa. Have you taken a foreign national from somewhere to do this? Because I don't believe that there is a skill to up until now that South Africa does not have, and yet that skill is needed in the workplace. The third question, Chairperson, is about education. Minister and the commissioner said that the issue of education, that people are educated, but their education is not related to the workplace. They can't be absorbed. My question is, why don't you form a synergy with the institutions of learning so that people who are taught at school may be easily absorbed, may be easily fitting when they finish that. But to wait for them to finish their studies, get qualification degrees and everything, only to notice later that, man, this is not relevant. So that would create an issue that we want to balance, we want to make equity. But because of the practicality of the things that are happening, it will never happen. Because there is a vast difference between the employment and the institution. They are getting the education that is not related to the workplace that they were supposed to do. My last observation is that, Commissioner, do you have a date, a time, where we would say that we would assess how far are we with in terms of equity? Because we know where we started from, we have been failing up until this far. Do we have a date that we are targeting to say, up until we reach this stage, we would have made this progress? In terms of women empowerment, I'm talking about this disparity that is shown here, that is the vast difference, and in terms of race, that is there a target that we are setting that we say that up until we reach that stage we will have achieved our goals.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you, Jake. And thank you, Commissioner. I think I have four questions. It may be fine. First of all, I'd just like to know, what is the average age of the EAP for the different race groups? And was the average age taken into account when measuring the employment equity in the top and senior management positions? Thirdly, I would like to know what support has been given through the self-regulation process up until now by government to businesses in the private sector, because labour legislation is created, the Employment Equity Act is created, and businesses are expected to implement these this legislation, but what support has been given to help them and to empower them in order to do so? And then also, I'd like to know, top and senior management, according to my research, makes out 0.8% and 2% respectively of the labour force. And even the minister in the state, because of the rate of transformation in these management levels. But would it not be better looking at the department's expanded mandate of job creation and taking into account that at the moment our unemployment rate is at 29.1%, which is the highest in the last 11 years, would it not be better to relax labour legislation and enable the private sector to create jobs through free market principles and to employ whoever they see fit or whoever they need or whoever they want in positions in order to stimulate the economy without restrictive labour legislation? Thank you.
We welcome the presentation, but as we are all know, we are in this country, we are all crying and worried about the employment, and we are also saying there is a lack of transformation and equity. So as the Commission, how are you going to solve or deal with this crisis of those graduates that are qualified but frustrated to get the jobs? Secondly, we also see the discrimination of rights. As the Commission, How many factories did you visit or monitor just around KZN or around in this province? Because we received lots of reports, different reports about the factories, each in Newcastle and Devon. Recently, the minister was in Devon. He visited one of those factories, but while he was there, they just closed the factory and the workers, they ran away. So did you make the follow-up about that visit of the minister? Lastly, did you, as the commission, did you organize the workshop or the training for the disability people, or just to empower the women in this country? I thank you.
Now, thank you, Chairperson. Before 681 break, a comment and clarification question. I think, Chairperson, it is very important for us as the members of this committee to remind ourselves that there is only one Chairperson that was elected. And the same boardroom is the name of the Newell, who is Honorable Adinga. We are not going to allow where we find ourselves in a situation whereby Honorable Bagrain Chairperson in each and every meeting of this nature undermines you. As women, we are not going to allow men to undermine us when we are given positions of responsibility. I think I need to pass the Chairperson so that everyone is going to remember that we only have one Chairperson who must lead us in this committee, Chair.
Ms. Harlow, the unfortunate part, Chairperson, is that your presentation is not numbered. We would love in the near future to see a numbered presentation so that we'll be in a position to refer to the slides. No, so now it's quite difficult for us to refer. But we are going to force our own. My first comment, Chair, is around the issue of the establishment of the commission, Chair, that advises the minister on issues related to employment equity. I've seen the act that it states that it's a 5-year term of office. My a question of curiosity is that when is the term ending? I so wish that we take that question in a good spirit. I don't wish you guys away. I'm happy that I can say that the commission is gender sensitive, and I see I'm led by a woman that is very clear. Sisalo, the other question is around the act that is going to be amended on the intervention as presented by the Chairperson, whereby every employer is going to provide employment equity compliance certificate being accessed by the IE from the department. My question will be, how far are you with this process? I've seen in the presentation that you are going to present or take it to the cabinet for adoption or amendment around May, June 2020. Then when do you envisage to implement such a piece of legislation? The second one, Chair, is around the reduction of the percent on top management. So is there any particular threshold that we have set for ourselves as a Chartered Commission? And to what extent is this enforceable? Chair, I've seen on the presentation which is headed as Top Management, Government and Private by Population Group, where the report states that we are sitting at 3.5% in terms of the foreign nationals in the entry level. So, Trey, I want to get what corrective measures or interventions that we have to address the employment of migrant laborers in the entry level as the commission. The last one, Chair, the fourth one is on towards the end, before the observation. On persons with disabilities, where the Chair indicated that the SAA provides the steps to the Commission on annual basis for them to be able to analyze and interpret at the end of the day to come up with a report. And she did indicate that they are receiving less reporting on disability, whereas the NDP says they should get to 7%. Chair, what mitigation measures do you have in mind to try to address this a problem that you have identified for us to be able to achieve our third target as an entity? I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning. Let me also welcome the report. The report is quite comprehensive and it deals with the critical areas that is are supposed to inform us on how to ensure that we de-racialize our labor market so that there is a better So in appreciating the report, I would raise the first question with regard to the 1% achievement of the road. Whether, for instance, the Commission can help us to understand what perhaps could be the contributing factors that led to this achievement, what steps could be taken to ensure that we, in fact, over a defined period, we in fact maybe by way of intervention like my colleague has raised earlier on, whether there could be an accurate set of targets so that we in fact over the defined period we ensure that we achieve specific targets or deal with whatever impediments that are there. The second question is with regard to the issue of the sectors. I've noted that you've raised the issue of the sectors that are involved, particularly transport and hospitality, as the sectors that are largely have high numbers at the lower levels of foreign nationals. I wanted to check if perhaps the Commission can help us just to further disaggregate in terms of provinces, which provinces have this high rate or levels of employment. The third question would be with regard to the timelines that we have articulated here with regard to the way forward and the key observations. You're speaking with regard to the amendment bill that is going to be submitted to cabinet and the timelines that are applied there, and whether, for instance, the timeline still stands, and maybe if you can help just to update the committee how far with that work. The last point that with due respect that we would want to raise both as a question, not as a question, but more as a statement,
not necessarily to the commission, but to the meeting. There is an issue here of racial stereotyping that pervades this debate. It makes even harmony, racial harmony in our country very much difficult. And it's quite sad that in this parliamentary platform would still find apartheid era ways of defining South African population groups to an extent that you would want to break further those who are not white and emphatically say they are blacks, and in addition to blacks you say they are colored, they are Indians, and so on. I think that's quite very sad. Our understanding is that if we were to talk about black and white, black would denote all other, everything that is not white. So this notion of seeking to blame Africans against other racial groups, particularly those that are still at the receiving end of the colonial and apartheid era difficulties, is going to be a problem. So one who requests to our honorable colleagues, Honorable Cardo and Bartley, to inspect to withdraw that kind of approach, because it doesn't help the debate. It's in fact reinforcing the stereotyping that we seek to undermine and to abolish. In conclusion, the point therefore that we want to emphasize is that the points that were raised earlier on, particularly with regard to the extent which we should in fact reinforce the powers of the minister, I think also is wrong. It's fundamentally wrong. The timeline that we're asking with regard to that area are in fact an indication as a committee that we say that we would want a splitting of those instruments so that we are able therefore to help deal with the shortcomings that the commission has pointed out. Thank you, sir.
No, thank you. Thank you, honorable members. For me, the commission is that maybe this commission is to assist the country or should I say this committee in receiving this presentation is to assist the country. And when I say the country, I mean everybody, whether business, labor, government, whether parliament, and ordinary communities, to address any question in my view, any challenge in my view, that everything in terms of skills is not addressed honestly and objectively. Somebody once said, if you want to see results in whatever project, when you engage in a project, you're not engaging in a project to see the results tomorrow. You're engaging in a project to see the results 10 years down the line. It's not about time. As much as it is challenging, Commissioner, that this thing of why things are like this is because of the education. But we must put it in a context that is going to make people to understand. And unpack when it was said at a particular time, don't teach a black child math and science. Because if you do that, just summarizing, you're going to open his or her eyes and her mind give her the, or him, just the skills to be able to know how to make an example, how to sweep a floor and to make a bed. So I'm just never exaggerating. Because today we are reaping the fruits of that. And I'm not implying that as post 1994 there are no errors that have been committed. It is my belief that it is a person who is working who makes mistakes. And I'm not justifying that mistakes are. Because the challenge that we are having, this government may be making mistakes, but making mistakes trying to undo or to address the challenge that we are faced with. And therefore, as the commission said, one of your mandates is to do research. Going to the 1%. From 1994, is it not going to be wise to unpack that, but also, which may be some of the weaknesses we may know, to say it's because of ABCC, it's because of the challenges of the system of education. I may be emotional, but I am emotional because I'm a progress of my existence. I worked in public service the whole of my life, and I know it's pain here in front of me. That's why my opening remarks were, we had a hospital secretary that had a son of 8. Because he was privileged. And I'm not, that is the ideological challenge that we're having and institutions of this nature. So for me, Chair and Honourable Members, we will be going around until we address the elephant in the room. So I thought in terms of skills, I would have I wanted to reflect that so that maybe as we move forward, and I think assist the country, assist politicians, assist leaders in the business community, assist leaders in the labor, in the trade unions, communities, not to be scared. The Chief Justice, that's what he was saying yesterday, if people may listen. And we must not be apologetic, we must not be afraid to reflect on our history. And by implication, and its implications, its challenges to us. But it doesn't mean that we must sweep the mistakes under the carpet of what we have from 1994 up to now. So the question, it's whatever, I think that is what, and as this committee, as we were, and I think Honorable Lawusi is correct, I mean, to be fair, the Department of Labor, among other things, has been, before the edit, those are one of the areas in terms of the of knowing of all this of the skills and this information that you are giving us. It is really quite an empowering process. But thank you very much. What we will do, because there have been quite tough questions that have been asked, we'll take a break. To just allow yourselves to say who's going to respond and what. We just have a five minutes or 10 minutes break, and then we will then come back and get the responses. Then if if the members want to ask more questions, it's fine. We will be here. If we are to be here until tomorrow, it's fine with me, because we are dealing with the most important issue in our country. Transformation. Thank you very much. 10 minutes.
The important transformation is